Clemson University has announced quarterback Trevor Lawrence has tested positive for COVID-19. He is currently in isolation, and the school has confirmed he will miss Saturday's game against Boston College.
When news broke last night that Trevor Lawrence, the biggest star in college football, tested positive for COVID-19, this college football season somehow got even more chaotic. Today, ESPN college football reporter David Hale brings us the latest on Lawrence's condition and what it means for Clemson's title hopes. And later, I talk with Kirk Herbstreit about the return of the Big Ten, whether anyone can stop Ohio State, and the strangeness of doing college game day in 2020. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, October 30th. This is ESPN Daily. David Hale, thank you for joining me amid all the chaos of what feels like a standard Thursday night at this point in 2020.
Yeah. There's a great Rowdy Piper quote that is, as soon as you think you have the answers, I change all the questions. That is 2020 in a nutshell.
Yeah, and that's a literally accurate statement because we had a show ready to go about college football, and here the questions all must be changed because the big news on this evening is that Trevor Lawrence has tested positive for COVID-19. If you somehow don't know who Trevor Lawrence is, this is the biggest name in college football, the quarterback at Clemson, the Heisman frontrunner, the presumptive number one pick of the NFL draft. And he released a statement on Twitter, and it said this: symptoms are relatively mild, and the only thing that hurts is missing the opportunity to be with my teammates this weekend, end quote. And Clemson plays Boston College tomorrow, David Hale. So let's start here. When and how did you first hear this news, and what do you know?
Yeah, so we started getting some buzz late afternoon that this is a possibility. Of course, I'm scrambling and trying to check with everybody that I can to get confirmation. It's a tricky deal, too, because when we're talking about an injury, it's a little different. Teams and players and programs have been a little more circumspect in releasing these details because it's medical. It's a HIPAA violation without the player's consent. That's sort of the first hurdle there. When we start hearing that it's happening, I had a pretty good idea that, yeah, these things are accurate, and we're just kind of waiting to get some confirmation, which came in this evening. Dabo Swinney told me, look, he has it. He's in isolation. We're following the guidelines. There's no other players that are being impacted via contact tracing, which, if you're looking for silver linings here for Clemson, that's a big one, because we've seen at a number of these other schools when a guy tests positive, well, his roommates are probably out. Anybody he had dinner with is probably out. If he went to the movies with some friends, they're out because of mandatory contact tracing quarantine. So the upside to this, if you're Clemson, is that it's only Trevor Lawrence. But of course, if there's one guy you don't want it to be, that's Trevor Lawrence.
So I want to be clear about something. So you did get a chance to talk to Dabo, Coach Dabo Swinney, coach of Clemson. You talked to him today?
Yeah, we just traded some text messages, of course, as this started playing out. I think that it was certainly not Clemson's hope to release this information when they did. But this is the world that we're living in at the moment. And I will say, to Clemson's credit, they've been relatively forthright on all of this stuff as we've gone along. They've been one of the handful of schools that is releasing testing data weekly. They've been very kind of open about what they're doing and how they're doing it and what the results have been. But again, as I said, it's a different matter when you start talking about individual players and saying, like, okay, this particular person tested positive, because it is a violation of HIPAA requirements there.
So I want to get into what exactly happens with this isolation period, because there's some nuance here that's important. So
right,
Lawrence faces, David, this mandatory 10-day isolation period. When is that period supposed to start or have started? Do we know when this positive test maybe actually happened?
Right. So we're into like a Matthew McConaughey time is a flat circle type of situation with these conversations. There's a lot of semantic debate here. What we do know, he tested positive. The test was yesterday, Wednesday. So Clemson tests Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And this was the Wednesday test that came back positive. He got that result, I believe, Thursday morning and went into isolation on Thursday. But that's also tricky because the ACC's rules say your isolation, your 10-day isolation period begins with, quote, the onset of symptoms slash a positive test, end quote. So that would lead you to believe it is either or. And I'm sure in a situation where we're talking about the best player in college football, we're going to go with the earliest possible date. So did his symptoms start on Tuesday? Did they start on Wednesday? That's a big question, and that will impact how long he is out for. And the other thing of it is he is he does have symptoms. So a lot of people have brought up the Nick Saban situation. Can he test out? First of all, the ACC does not have a test out policy. You are doing 10 days, whether you have negative tests the rest of the way or not, but he has symptoms. So this was not a false negative. So when you have symptoms, you can't return. That 10 day is just your minimum. So you can't return if you are still showing any symptoms. So if you have any sign of a fever or respiratory problems, and that can't be dulled with medication, that has to be off medication. You have to be free of that stuff for at least 24 hours before you can return. And then the ACC has mandatory cardiac testing. They have a three-pronged cardiac test to check for myocarditis that you also have to get past. And all of that is assuming then that he's out for 10 days and is not going to be practicing, is not going to be working out. And typically you would not throw a guy right back onto the field. But 10 days from Wednesday, which is essentially the timeline we're looking at, would be Saturday, November 7th, where Clemson just so happens to have a game against fourth-ranked Notre Dame.
Yeah, I was going to say the semantics and the chronology here in which you're almost rooting for the symptoms to have occurred earlier so you can get Trevor Lawrence on the field sooner. I mean, it's all incredibly important because number one Clemson is about to take on number four Notre Dame, not this weekend, but the weekend after. So tell us what's at stake with all of this timing.
So first off, the biggest hurdle for my end on this is that I now have to really practicing DJ Uiagalelei, who is the backup quarterback for Trevor Lawrence now, who will be the presumptive starter against Boston College and would theoretically then start against Notre Dame if Lawrence can't go. So he is no joke. He was the number one quarterback recruit in the country this past year. He enrolled in January. He has spent a lot of time there. He's gotten a little bit of mop-up duty playing time so far this year. He's really talented. Now, really talented as a freshman with 15 passes under your belt is not the same as putting Trevor Lawrence out there, but they're not just throwing the first guy that they found at the bus station out there for them. They've got a really talented backup. The question I think would be is how ready is Trevor Lawrence to get back out on the field when he can? I think Clemson is going to certainly, they were a 30 some point favorite against Boston College this weekend. Even without Trevor Lawrence, you would assume they still have a very good chance at winning that game. But, you know, if you're talking about a defensive tackle, putting them right back on the field after a respiratory illness when they have literally not practiced for a week and a half, that's a tricky situation. This, you're talking about Trevor Lawrence. I'm certain that he'll be isolating with his laptop and doing Zoom QB meetings and doing film sessions and all of that stuff. He just won't be doing the physical part of it with his teammates. So if you're Dabo Swinney, do you say we're going to put this guy back on the field the first possible second that we can? I mean, it's Trevor Lawrence, so certainly the odds would be in the favor of doing that. But it is, you know, it's a little bit of a Willis Reed type of situation where you're asking a guy who genuinely would not have been available 10 hours earlier to come out on the field and play this game.
You mentioned his backup, and what do we need to know about this kid that we'll be meeting in full game form for the first time against BC?
Yeah, so he's from California. He was a high school All-American. He was, I think our ESPN 300 had him as maybe the number 40-something recruit, but he was the number one overall pocket passer. Pocket passer probably doesn't do him justice. He moves pretty well for a big guy. I wouldn't really compare him to Lawrence. He's definitely not the Trevor Lawrence body type. He's a little more filled out. And he's not really Deshaun Watson either. He's probably not quite that mobile. I've heard people compare him more to Taj Boyd, who was the quarterback before those guys got to Clemson, but he's certainly bigger than Taj too. He's got a very strong arm. Guy threw for more than 10,000 yards in high school. I think he had 120 some high school touchdowns. You know, we talk about true freshmen, and again, he doesn't have a lot of experience, but he did get there in January. He went through half of spring practice before the virus came and shut everything down. He has been in all of the meetings. He has been working with Trevor Lawrence alongside him for the better part of a year now. I don't think it's just like throwing a true freshman, a typical true freshman out there.
I wanted to ask you, though, in terms of Clemson being the number one team in the country with all of these expectations, and I hesitate to skip this far ahead, but that's my job. But like, how does this impact this national championship hunt, David Hale? What happens to that prospect given the news that we just discussed?
That's such a fascinating conversation, because we were already going to have sort of murky waters for the College Football Playoff Committee. I'm sure what they hope is that whoever starts these games, Clemson goes ahead and wins and takes that off their plate as a worry. But here's the thing. I mean, do you punish Clemson for losing potentially a game to a top five team without their starting quarterback when, you know, maybe an Oregon or a USC or an Ohio State or a Penn State, they're not even playing as many games as Clemson's playing. So that's one aspect of this conversation. We have heard from the playoff committee in the past that they do take injuries into consideration as they evaluate teams. Now, they have not addressed this specifically about COVID, because we weren't, of course, that wasn't on our radar before. But I would think that they would view this similarly to an injury. And again, we're not talking about a broken leg here where Trevor Lawrence is gone for the rest of the season and we have to evaluate who Clemson is without him. He will be back at some point. But here's the really tricky part. Let's say Notre Dame wins this game, and we're going down a theoretical wormhole here, but Notre Dame wins that game. Then they play North Carolina a little further down the road, and North Carolina could beat Notre Dame and have that head-to-head against Notre Dame. Well, the first playoff tiebreaker, or the first ACC championship game tiebreaker, when there's three teams tied, which in this scenario there would be three teams with one losses, is your combined win-loss percentage among the teams that are tied. That would leave North Carolina and Notre Dame playing for the ACC championship and Clemson left out. So that just adds a whole other wrinkle to it. Again, we're talking about a lot of what-ifs with a story that has more than its share of them. But when you're talking about, like, let's project the playoff, these are the kinds of things that people already are thinking about.
Yeah, so if you're a member of the playoff committee, you are either hoping that, well, the symptoms actually were earlier than maybe it was reported, and or that this kid, DJ, is actually going to be excellent if he has to play against Notre Dame.
They're learning to pronounce Uiagalelei just the same as I am, and I'm sure they're rooting for him.
So we've had so many of these outbreaks across the country, of course, but also within this sport that you cover. And now that the biggest star in the sport has tested positive, I'm just curious how you think this news reflects on college football's insistence on taking the field this year in the form that it has.
I think we reached a point pretty early on where the decision was simply, we're going to keep moving forward. And the only thing that was going to stop that train was something truly tragic. Thankfully, that tragic thing has not happened. And then this is a guy, Trevor Lawrence, who is the biggest star, the one guy you should be protecting in season, and he still turns up positive. You know, that to me goes to show that there is no foolproof way of doing this, and there never was going to be. The bubble worked really well for some sports. That was never going to happen in college football. And even beyond a bubble, they're sort of the opposite of a bubble. They're on a college campus, which is as fraught a situation as you can be in.
Thank you for being on this very strange night, our personal true detective.
Yes. When you can say Uiagalelei and McConaughey in the same interview, I consider this was a good one. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, I talk with ESPN's Kirk Herbstreit about the return of the Big Ten and tomorrow night's matchup between Ohio State and Penn State.
Delicious, meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So earlier on Thursday, before the news of Trevor Lawrence testing positive for COVID-19 broke, I spoke with ESPN's lead college football analyst, Kirk Herbstreit, about Saturday night's pivotal Ohio State-Penn State matchup, which he'll be working, and the turbulent return of college football to the Big Ten. Good sir, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, happy to be with you, man.
So, Kirk, the big news out of the Big Ten this week came out of Wisconsin. The Badgers announced that 6 players and 6 staff members have tested positive for COVID-19, and that's including head coach Paul Christ and the starting quarterback Graham Mertz. So I'm curious, how much of a concern is it for the conference to have this big an outbreak so soon after returning to play?
All these leagues, as they've tried to navigate and put their season together, going back to June and July when we didn't know if we'd have any football. You know, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 jumped out. The ACC and the SEC and the Big 12 kind of kept on the path of trying to figure it out. And I think that ultimately everybody kind of came up with their own plan on how many games they would play, if they would build in a little bit of a leeway on the back end in case they did have this kind of breakout. You know, the SEC and the Big 12, you've seen them use those dates already. And the Big 10 just didn't have – they just didn't have that wiggle room. By the time they got everybody together and they put their calendar together, they obviously had to be involved in the playoff. And so that's why I think they really put themselves in a tight spot. You know, they came back with some rules where they said, hey, any positive test, 21 days, no questions asked. And then they didn't have any dates. Their schedule goes right up to December 19th. Mm. And the playoff is announced after the conference championship games the next day on the 20th. And that's why I think any of us, myself included, there was no way the Big Ten was going to be able to get through 8 weeks, 9 weeks of football without something happening like we're seeing in Madison right now.
Well, as day-to-day goes, the good news is, God willing, you get to call a huge game on Saturday. And that's No. 3 Ohio State visiting No. 18 Penn State. And that's where College Game Day is going to be. The circus as it is, which is a very different version of it, will be traveling there. What do you expect to see on Saturday night?
Well, because we've been doing this for so long, you know, we've been to some huge games, what we would normally consider like an Alabama, Georgia, College Game Days in Tuscaloosa. Here we go. And it's Dez and there's Reese and there's Pollock and we got our camera guys and they brought the pep band out. I mean, it was just us, you know, and we've done that every week. And so the first 2 or 3 weeks, Pablo, were just bizarre. It was just so strange. And like anything in life, you just adjust and your mind becomes different. I mean, we go to Penn State for Ohio State. I mean, it is a sea of humanity for College Game Day.
Whiteout conditions, no shadows, no visible horizon, disorienting. And for Penn State, the ultimate home field advantage.
All you can see is white and signs, and there's probably 15,000 people there at 8 in the morning. And now you have nobody. And then the game. It's my favorite atmosphere in college football.
Wow. Of all of them, this is your favorite.
Yeah.
Wow.
The Penn State whiteout. To me, they have the best student section in the country. There's no one close to them. And it's such a celebration. You know, it's typically Michigan or Ohio State. And it's just wild. You know, I'm trying really hard to focus on what we have instead of what we don't have through this whole thing. I'm really trying to stay in a positive place. And so, yeah, it's frustrating, but as you said, we're going to have a game Saturday and can't wait to watch those guys compete and play.
Yeah, you had a chance to talk to Justin Fields ahead of Ohio State's opening victory over Nebraska. What was your sense of him? What did he tell you about anticipating environments that are so weird and bizarre like this?
Well, I talked to him again yesterday on another Zoom, just getting ready for this broadcast. And it was Chris Fowler, myself, and him. Mm. It was really weird because he was sitting in his apartment by himself. And we started talking about this. And we were talking about Wisconsin and how real this is and how quickly it can happen. And he said that they didn't need Wisconsin to know how real it is. He's like, I'm either here, I take my classes online, I don't have a roommate. And he literally goes to the Woody Hayes facility and he breaks down film and he does whatever he does and he practices and he gets his food and he comes right back. And I think that's the reality for these college football players that are being responsible. And it sounds unfair and unbelievable. And it's just kind of what you have to do to hold up your end of the bargain. Because if you go out to Chipotle or you go over here or go over there, next thing you know, you pick it up.
Right.
And then you bring it into the facility and it's boom. It's wildfires.
When you talk to him, Kirk, and he's facing Penn State again tomorrow at Penn State, he originally committed to Penn State, right, after watching him beat Ohio State back in 2016. What did he have to say about this particular matchup?
Well, first he said exactly what you just said, which I found incredibly powerful for fans to understand what the whiteout or any scene can do.
The reason I actually committed to Penn State was that year they beat Ohio State. And I was like, yo, this school is crazy. So it's kind of just seeing it on TV. I just felt the energy.
And that scene and that victory and that celebration, he commits to Penn State. And then he ended up ultimately going to Georgia and then transferring over to Ohio State. He wishes it was a real whiteout. I mean, for a guy that was impacted in such a way to see the whiteout and now not have a chance to plan it, he's obviously frustrated about that. But like all of us, he's kind of obviously moved past that. And now it's just about going out and trying to execute.
So in terms of what we're going to see on the field itself, how dangerous is this Buckeyes team?
We don't know yet. I thought week one against Nebraska, by their standard, it was like a 7 out of 10. So it was a starting point, enough to get you excited about Justin Fields, his always wide receivers. They got some great defensive personnel. But I think the bar is so high for them because of recent teams in the last 5 or 6 years that's what they're graded against. But let's see how they do against Penn State on the road, against a team that's really, as you know, kind of been backed into a corner with a surprise upset against Indiana. So they can't afford to lose another game, so they're going to bring everything into this game. So we're going to learn a lot more about Ohio State after this game.
Well, let's talk about that surprise, because it became like partially this like constitutional debate. It became this Zapruder film kind of analysis.
Yeah.
What did you make of, I guess, what happened to Penn State, but also how Penn State is processing that now coming into a game that I'm assuming was circled even more brightly on their schedule?
I was up in the booth about to call the Minnesota-Michigan game, and yet, we're watching that game, and I'm like, there's no way they're going to get this conversion.
Penix takes it. Back, steps up, opening, rolls near side.
I mean, he's running sideways, and it's
right.
How he turns the corner, goes airborne, and I'm like, there's no way he's going to get there.
Goes to the corner, dives to the corner. He didn't get there. No, they say he did. They say he hit the pylon, and Indiana wins.
And the fact he made it close is remarkable. And then, of course, the replay, super slow-mo, and I'm with Bill LaMonnier, who's a former Big Ten official, and I'm asking him, Bill, that ball hit the ground and then the pylon. He goes, well, his body's not touching the ground. He's still airborne. And I was like, who cares? The ball is hitting out of bounds.
It seems like the ball hits the ground out of bounds before it hits the pylon. I realize we're breaking this down to the millimeters and milliseconds.
Where I grew up, if the ball hits out of bounds, he's out of bounds. And he goes, not necessarily. And he was like reading bylaw 638. I mean, it was insane. And it took about 5 to 7 minutes for the replay crew to get through that. And they, of course, gave it to him, and Indiana went crazy.
After review, the ruling on the field stands, touchdown.
And I'm still sitting here a week later. Somebody needs to lay that rule out for me, because I always thought if the ball touched out of bounds that you were down. But clearly not.
Yeah, I'm guessing when you grew up, where you grew up, you didn't have like super slow-mo phantom cameras measuring millimeters, Kirk.
Exactly.
So in terms of like who poses the biggest threat to Ohio State, given all that preamble in the Big Ten, who do you got?
Well, I did the Michigan game last week in Minneapolis, and they looked really good. I left that stadium last week going, I really like this team. Now, we'll see where they go. But that night, they played with like a love for each other, and in football, that goes a long way. So I'm excited to see where they go from here. But I would say Michigan right now.
So before I let you go, Kirk, one of these strange things that really only makes sense in 2020 is coming up in a couple of weeks, and College Game Day is going to be broadcasting live from Augusta National, the site of the Masters. So what are you looking forward to about the absurdity of all of that?
Man, first of all, the Masters in November is so strange, right? Just the setting alone is going to be remarkable and memorable. And I think for a lot of fans, I've never received more texts from people around the country when an announcement was made that College Game Day will be going to a certain location than I received when people heard that Game Day was going to go to the Masters on the 14th. So we're fired up as a show. We're honored to be able to bring the show there. That this is one of the times where COVID and all these things that have been so bad with the reschedule of the date, it worked out in the college football season, and we've been able to align with Augusta. So we're fired up and looking forward to it.
I mean, you got to find like a giant green jacket for Corso, right? Like that has to be part of this. I don't want to produce your show for you, but it feels necessary.
Oh, yes. Yeah, you're right about that. We'll make that happen.
Kirk Herbstreit, thank you for joining me on ESPN Daily.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right, up next, a sneak peek of a special bonus episode of ESPN Daily featuring maybe the most press-shy character in the modern NBA, former 76ers general manager Sam Hinkie.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. And it's a story I want you to get a lot more of this afternoon on the ESPN Daily podcast feed. Because in our first ever weekend bonus episode, I'm talking to Sam Hinkie, the famously reclusive former general manager of the Philadelphia 76ers, who just hired Daryl Morey to do the job that Sam tried to do and got ousted in the process. It's a wide-ranging conversation with Hinkie like you've never heard him before. He opens up about working for the Sixers, about Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, about the extremely distinctive way he thinks, and what he's doing now, and somehow even more. So here's a snippet of our talk to give you a brief taste, and you can hear the full conversation later today. Daryl Morey, your former boss, colleague, your friend, just got hired this week to do your old job, which is president of basketball operations at the Philadelphia 76ers. What was your reaction to that news?
I was stoked. I'm stoked now. I think it's great news. He's not a good hire. He's a great hire. It's a really big move for the franchise, for a franchise I care a lot about, with a bunch of people that I care a lot about. And I just think it portends really great things for the future for the Sixers, which remains to this day, remains meaningful to me. And so so I'm stoked.
Yeah, I want to get into all of that because, first of all,
did you know before I knew, which is to say, did you know before Woj tweeted about this on Wednesday afternoon?
Oh, Pablo, the nature of compounding trust with people over a long period of time is being careful about what you say and what you know. I'll say this. I like, it's important to me. Maybe this sounds facetious, but it's me. It's important to me to earn trust with people in a lot of ways. And one of the ways you do that is be careful about what you knew or when you knew anything.
So I can sense the drawbridge raising a little bit. So I'm going to jump on top of it.
We're one minute into our conversation, and here you go with like zingers.
Sam Hinkie, the full interview with one of basketball's most unique minds, and what life is like for him now that he's out of the game. Just download wherever you get ESPN Daily. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Andy Tennant, Eve Troe, Chris Tumanello, and Aaron Vail. Special thanks this week to Garrett Lang, go Dodgers, and Troy Farkas. I'll talk to you Monday.